Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's a very exciting day, not just because the playoffs are starting, but because back in time for the postseason, after recovering, is our favorite Jackie McMullen. Jackie, welcome back.
Yay.
Thank you. So nice to hear your voices, all of you.
And so nice to hear you. And that's Ban McMahon, who is back from his one-week banning. Andrew banned McMahon last week, Jackie. We don't know why. It's kept internal. All medals are handled
because that's why we call him Andrew the Hater Hahn. That's what he does.
Right. Yeah, but come on. We're reporters. We should have broken that story.
Well, Jackie, I've been sworn to secrecy.
I'll be back to y'all next week. I will break this story for y'all by next week. Go ahead.
All right. We got the playoffs. We're going to talk about the matchups. But first off, Jackie, a major Magic Johnson event happened this week. I know it's been discussed a lot on all kinds of forms of media over the last few days, but almost nobody in the media knows Magic like you do. Obviously, you covered him extensively in the Celtics-Lakers battles, but also wrote a book on Bird and Magic that later became a Broadway show. So I just will yield to you to get your reaction to what you saw with Magic the other night.
Well, so I suppose the timing of it was shocking. The only thing, Brian, that was shocking to me was that he didn't tell Jeannie first. And I think he said because he thought she would talk him out of it. But he still owed her that. So that was disappointing to me. But as you know, I left in March, first week of March, to have this surgery. And right before I left, I was feverishly working on a story that I hoped to run during the playoffs. And I was talking to a GM, and we were talking about the Lakers, even though that really wasn't relevant to the story because everyone talks about the Lakers.
I know.
And he was saying how he really did think they were going to have trouble landing free agents and how they really had misjudged what the Laker brand means in today's world because players are so independent in their thinking. And then he said to me, and you know Magic's going to quit. And I kind of laughed, you know. And then I thought about it, and I was like, well, it wouldn't shock me. Because remember when Magic Johnson was a coach for about a minute?
16 it was games, very, I think it was.
It was similar to this. I mean, this is a longer period of time. But there's nothing Irvin likes
Talk
more.
Talk show host, than, too.
Right. There's nothing Irvin likes more than being Magic Johnson. And there really is two personas that go along with that. And I think he thought that being Magic Johnson would be enough. And we all know it's a really hard job, what they were asking him to do. And yes, Rob Pelinka did a lot of the day-to-day. But Magic is, I've never met anyone that's more about positivity than him. I've never been in a room, and I've been in the room with a lot of engaging people, as you guys have, because it's part of our business. I have never seen anyone that can take over a room the way Irvin can or Magic can and make everybody in the room feel like the most important person. And that's what he feeds off. And that positivity is what he feeds off and what has made him this iconic figure in sports. And there was too much negativity for him. And he couldn't control the narrative the way he normally could. And the idea of tweeting, for instance, to Russell Westbrook, congratulations on averaging a triple-double for a season, that is the kind of stuff that gets Irvin Johnson all jazzed up. It was for years why he and Larry couldn't possibly get along, because as far as Larry's concerned, you're either on my team or you're dead to me. You know, and that's just not something that Irvin has ever understood or Magic has ever understood. So shocking. The timing was shocking, but it's not shocking to me at all. Now, in a way, I wish he hadn't done it, because I think the people that are saying he quit have a point. You know, if they don't get the free agents, if things don't work out the way they're supposed to, a lot of this blame is going to lay at his feet, and he has to own that and accept that, and I imagine he will. You know, in terms of long-term legacy, he's still Magic Johnson. He's still one of the greatest players of all time. And you know, maybe he should just leave it at that and stop taking these little forays into the game he loves. Just leave it at that. That would be my advice to him.
Well, the one thing that is just, it's difficult for me to handle, and I'm not a Los Angelino, although I spend a lot of time there. I am not a product of the Lakers-Celtics rivalry, although I remember watching them. I was too young. Lakers exceptionalism, it's very difficult for me to understand and accept, especially in 2019. And Magic did it again.
Right.
He is saying, and I know he doesn't mean this. It's just inbred in the Lakers' hubris. He is up there, and I know he's being very emotional, and I appreciate that. He's saying, I feel terrible that I can't congratulate a player because it's called tampering. I can't congratulate Russell Westbrook on averaging a triple-double. I can't be at Dwayne Wade's final home game tonight. That's what I'd like to be. And yet, as he is doing that, he is completely robbing the attention away from Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki. The exact thing that he said he was trying not to do.
Yeah. Listen,
I thought it was all about magic.
On a lot of different levels.
I thought it was ridiculously sorry that he doesn't tell his quote-unquote sister, his boss, and that she finds out, you know, who knows, I mean, on Twitter or whatever. I'm sure somebody called her, but that's sorry. And then, like, I mean, you couldn't have waited until exit interviews. You have to do this literally in the middle of Dwayne Wade's last home game, in the middle of Dirk's last home game, when those two guys had just, like, storybook finishes, but nope, the Lakers are the story. Magic's the story. I really did think, and it's a shame, but I thought it was so sorry, both to the Lakers and to the rest of the league.
And you know what's interesting about that, Tim, and I understand your point entirely. I guarantee you it never crossed Irvin's mind. And that's
because
part of the problem, isn't it?
Yes.
It's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree with that. And the idea of living in the past and what the Laker brand means, I think that's also a fair point. But, you know, of course, the drama going forward will be so interesting. I think they've already said that Rob Pelinka is going to stay. Is Luke Walton going to stay now? I mean, there's so many questions.
I wouldn't promise anybody anything. This is another thing. Just handle your business. Don't promise anybody anything. And then Magic says they can get a player and be in the Western Conference Finals next year, which literally caused me to slap my head. We need to move on to the playoffs, but Tim, I got goosebumpy, not only with Dwayne stuff, but with Dirk, because Dirk had held the emotion in all year, unlike Dwayne, and when he let it out the last two nights, when he said goodbye, and even last night when they gave the tribute to him in San Antonio, and then him getting his last basket, I know you were there. I mean, I just wanted you to describe a little bit what that was like.
Yeah, and there were little glimpses of emotion. You know, he's really touched by some of the unplanned organic farewell tributes around the league, you know, the Doc Rivers moment, the chants around in arenas around the league. But, you know, he always kind of kept that 1% chance, that 0.1% chance even that I might come back. This, you know, it's probably it, but it's not. And then, you know, just over the last few days, it became final, and, you know, he said it. Basically, he just came to the realization that, you know, this foot that he's had to drag around all year long, and, I mean, he's literally getting injections into the bone of the foot
let him hobble
up and down the floor, taking all kinds of, I mean, and he came to the realization, like, I mean, he had to get shot up to play in that last home game, and he's just like, I can't do it anymore. And you know, it was just like that day or the day before that he decided, you know what, this is definitely it. And I'm not even sure that he 100% planned to announce his retirement that night. But, I mean, what a moment. You know, they bring five of his childhood heroes out there. You know, it was, you know, he puts up 30. His teammates are just force-feeding him. I mean, just he breaks down. You know, you talk about emotions. The time that he broke down during the game was not about basketball. There was a video spotlighting all the, at least a lot of the charity work he'd done, and it was really heavy on the annual hospital visits, children's hospital visits that he does, and he was just overcome with emotion. And as he said, you know, he couldn't even see the rim. He took a shot of the next possession. He couldn't even see the rim because all the tears in his eyes. And then last night, you know, just all the history between Dirk and the Spurs, the immense respect there, especially, you know, between Dirk and Pop. And, you know, it was a long tribute video. It was about a 90-second thing. And then I think it you know, so that kind of got to him. And then it hit him like, I really am about to walk out on the floor for the last time. And, I mean, he was bawling before that game. He actually cried harder on the court before the game in San Antonio than at any point the previous night in his last home game.
Awesome. I mean, in a season, Jackie, where a lot of people talked about being unhappy, the happiness of this last week. Also, the Cavs did a beautiful thing for Channing Frye. He didn't play. He didn't have a historic career.
Right.
But one of the most liked guys in the NBA. They did a big thing for him. Kevin Love comes into the game wearing Channing's college jersey, sort of as a warm-up. They gave everybody shooting shirts, like warm-up shirts that had Channing's name on the back of it. Just they handled it so well. It was the NBA at its best these last few days. It's just a great moment. Something strange happened in the NBA last night, and so much has gone on that it's been hard to keep track of all of it, even for us who are tasked with keeping track of all of it. The Portland Trailblazers played a game last night where they played six players, and the sixth player, I believe, only played 13 minutes. That was
Zach Collins
off the bench.
Yeah.
They played three guys 48 minutes. There was a rookie. I can't even remember his name.
Anfernee Simons.
How could you forget the name Anfernee? Come on. There's only been 12.
Anfernee Simons. He had 39 points. And the immortal Scal Labissiere had 29 points in this game.
By the way, Simons had more points last night than he did his entire rookie season leading up to that. Gary Trent Jr. also played 48 minutes in that one. And, that was kind of funny to me because Gary Trent Sr. was Dirk's teammate when Dirk's rookie season. So I thought that was kind of a weird fitting thing.
My boy Jake Layman had 19, because I know you always are wondering, Brian.
Yes.
By the way, Jake Layman's a legit player.
Yeah, I've been telling you guys.
Basically,
I grew up with his mom, right, Tim?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
I didn't know that. No one tells me anything.
Well,
yes.
It was a game to determine the 3 and 4 seed, which was a game to determine whether the Rockets were going to be on the same side of the bracket as the Warriors. Pretty damn important game, if you ask me.
Because I was about to make my travel plans.
Yeah. And they were playing. I wasn't watching the game. I was flying, but I was reading about the game. And so I didn't see it with my own two eyes, but the reporters there were saying they were basically playing a high school zone where you just sort of stand there and get in their way, don't foul or whatever. And I think the Kings put up more than 80 points in the first half alone.
The Kings were up big, so I was thinking, I'm going OKC. Okay, Rockets, OKC.
And it kind of looked like they were, I thought in my mind, they were saying we'd rather play the Jazz in the first round than we would play the Thunder. And they were saying, even though we're going to be on the same side of the bracket as the Warriors, we're going to worry about our first round opponent. Even though they were like 14-2 down the stretch of the season, they've been playing good. And then they just roared back and won and pushed Houston into the 4 seed. I mean, McMahon, what's the Rockets' emotion? The Rockets lost a game in Oklahoma City that could potentially dramatically affect their playoff run.
Yeah, the Rockets obviously, they wanted the 2 seed. It was there for them to take, and they weren't able to finish it off up there in OKC. So they, you end up where you end up after that point. But honestly, I don't think the Rockets were really too concerned about who they were playing in the first round. And it's not that they, it's not a disrespectful.
What about the second round, McMahon?
Yeah, it's not the first round. It's the second round, man.
You're gonna have to play the Warriors sometime.
I mean, oh, I guess.
And honestly,
stop it.
You do. You got to look.
You don't want to play them in the
finals. The West. Well, I'll say this. Maybe you do. Maybe if just to spin it. Maybe if you're the Rockets, it'd be better off for you to play them before the wear and tear of the playoffs has worn down James Harden, before or while Chris Paul is as fresh as possible. Maybe you've got a better chance. And look, no one's going to pick them to win the series, but maybe you've got a better chance to beat the Warriors playing them earlier than if you play them later. And, hey, do you really think the Rockets feel any different if they get bounced in the West semis versus the West Finals? They either win a championship or they're pissed. So, to me, you have to go through the Warriors. When it happens, I don't think it's really all that important. But, hey, I'll say this, let's not just assume that the Jazz are going to roll over and play dead. I mean, the Jazz right,
well,
are a team
that's... We'll get
well,
to
that's,
the playoff
that's another reason why you don't want to drop to the fourth spot. But anyway.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right, we're going to go with the playoff matchups. We're going to start in the East. Milwaukee's playing Detroit. That's the 1-8. Detroit, all Detroit wanted was to make the playoffs very badly. They traded Blake Griffin to make the playoffs. They gave Dwayne Casey a whole bunch of money with the hope you get them into the playoffs. You hear about teams not wanting to be in the middle. Tom Gores, their owner, just wanted into the playoffs. They got there. They struggled down the stretch. They lost some games that cost them positioning, but they did win their last two. Came back from behind.
Without Blake
hampered. So Detroit's season, I believe, is a success now. I think they're going to be fodder. Is there anything much to say on this series?
Nah. I mean, if they win a game, it'll be a mild surprise.
Yeah, especially because we're still not sure. I mean, I would assume Blake is going to play, but... I mean, you would have assumed he would have played in that game, the final game to get them in. Yeah, and they didn't play
against
that
either. It was against the Knicks, right? Stranger things have happened. Number two, Toronto versus Orlando. Again, I think Orlando's season is a success. They're thrilled. They hadn't been in the playoffs since Dwight Howard was there. Huge season for them. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I think there could be a little more to this, and here's how.
They are playing very well down the stretch.
They are playing better than almost anybody. I think since February 1st, they have the best defensive efficiency rating of any team since February. Okay. And they force you to take mid-range shot. And here it's more about Toronto than it is them. Now you have Kawhi Leonard. So maybe we wipe out everything that's ever happened to the Toronto Raptors, but there is something lingering with this team and their inability to live up in the postseason to who they are. Now, maybe this is a moot point now because you have a new coach and a new star in Kawhi who has obviously never seemed to have any of those problems. But you still, I mean, I'm just going to be watching Kyle Lowry so closely because I really like Kyle Lowry. I think he's an underrated player that doesn't get the respect he deserves. But, and it's a big but, he's got to perform too. DeMar Rosen, he's gone. But Kyle Lowry still has something to prove too. So let's just say for argument's sake, Orlando steals game one. That you guys have been to Toronto, right? You know how the sky is falling the minute things go a little bit awry. So I'm not saying Orlando's going to beat Toronto because I don't think they will because I think Kawhi and I think Kyle Lowry is ready for this. I do. But I just think it makes it a little more human and a little more interesting than just dismissing a 2-7 seed.
Well, I went to Toronto last year to do a story on their historic game one failures because they had lost.
Yes.
I can't remember, 8 or 9 in a row. I mean, maybe more. It'd been like a decade since they won a game one.
Right.
Completely investigated, did the whole story. It sits on their shoulder. Now, there's new players, and last year they did have some success. They had some game one success the last few years. But, obviously, it sits there, and that's one of the things if they get behind. You know, last year against the Cavs, they had game one under control. They blew it, ended up costing the series. So,
there is
that baggage. Orlando, by the way, 22-9 coming down the stretch. The hottest team in the Eastern Conference won 8 of their last 10 and finished on a 4-game win streak. I mean, at the end of the season...
They play good defense. Bit. You know, they can get at you. I'll tell you, the Celtics didn't win a game against the Orlando Magic this year, Brian.
I know, that was crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, they're not playing
Vucevic is better than people think, too. He's another guy that people... don't know how to say his name. They don't pay attention. He's pretty good.
Vucevic made my most improved ballot.
He did. Now, we should talk about that. We don't have time, do we?
No.
Just one question quick. I just must intercede. I just have been dying to ask you this during my entire leave, and I still haven't submitted my ballot, but I'm going to this afternoon. Did you have LeBron James on your All-NBA team?
Third team All-NBA, yes.
Third team. I thought about leaving him off, but honestly... There's not another four that I feel like, this guy really should be on the ballot.
Let me ask you another question. Was LaMarcus Aldridge on your ballot as a forward? Because he's eligible as a forward.
And I was talking to a writer last night who went that way, left LeBron off and put LaMarcus on. Which, you know, there's an argument to be made there.
LaMarcus plays a lot of center. I'm not going to get too focused on the positions. When LeBron played, LeBron's statistics were phenomenal. I know that it was a disappointment.
Didn't play any defense, though. And does it weigh? Do you have to weigh in? And I think you do. the fact that he torpedoed that franchise, man.
That's why I consider the games missed, the complete lack of effort on defense, and the fact that he threw a grenade that blew up in that locker room. Those are the reasons I legitimately did consider leaving him off, but then I just couldn't do it.
More importantly, Jackie, who did you have as your 13 guards? Because that determines tens of millions of dollars.
I know. And so who did you have as your second? Well, let's start. Let's just do the guards quickly. I know we're off
camera. Well, I already did my ballot I already did my ballot this week.
Who did you have as your first team guards? Everybody had the same, right?
Yeah.
James and
Harden, Curry,
right.
Kyrie.
Well, some people had Damian Lillard. So who's your second team?
Lillard and Kyrie.
By the way, Lillard called you out on Twitter, Wendy. He's mad at you. He thought he was first team.
Well, that's fine.
It's fair. It's a fair point. But yeah, so third team, I went up and down. I don't even remember what I don't think I've actually put it in yet. But so did you have Westbrook on your ballot?
I did not.
Isn't that amazing? He averaged a triple double. And I know why you didn't. Like, does Oklahoma City deserve two? Did you have Bradley Beal on your ballot?
I did.
Those are the two that I went with.
I had Bradley Beal also. And I thought long and hard about it. I left Kemba Walker off.
That's a tough one. All right. Philadelphia versus Brooklyn. This one could get interesting. We've got Joel Embiid uncertainty here.
Yes.
When he's played, he's looked pretty good, but they've had to keep shutting him down. When you look at the schedule, When you look at the schedule, they don't. You know, sometimes in these first round games, you get big gaps between games, and they do have a big gap between. I guess they do have a big gap between two and three, but
I'm having trouble manufacturing drama in the Eastern Conference first round. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Well, the only thing I think
the semis will be fun.
The biggest disparity in this series is, well, if Embiid doesn't play, a lot changes. A lot. But their bench, you know, the Nets get almost 48 points a game off from their bench. And we know the Sixers, that's their biggest weakness. If you have to sit Embiid for any of these games, the landscape changes. If he guts it out, which is my guess, because he's a tough kid and he wants to play, you know, then I think it's business as usual because they're not quite there yet, the Nets. But, you know, D'Angelo Russell will cause you some problems. It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. If Philly is right and they get their full starting lineup, I think they handle their business. Again, Brooklyn's season is a success. But it could get interesting.
Yeah.
If Embiid is not right or even can't play, because Elton Brand got asked about it last night, and he said he was optimistic that he'd play, but he left the door open. It was possible he may not be ready. So
right.
I don't know if that was gamesmanship or if that's a real thing. It's hard for me to read because they sat Embiid. He came back and played that game against Giannis. He looked really good, and then he sat again. So I don't know.
You know what I think? I think he's been gutting through knee stuff all year long, and we just haven't known about it. I think he's been gutting through knee soreness, knee pain, whatever you want to call it, from game one to game 82, and he wanted to play more games this year. How many games did he miss? 16, I think. Is that right? I don't have.
Well,
he
was like in the top 5 in minutes in the first 2 months of the season, and he was really trying to show that he was like a warrior, and you know, he doesn't have to do that. And I have no idea. Excuse me, I have no idea.
Well, minutes aren't up to him, are they, Brian? They shouldn't be.
No, but that's what happened. They ended up actually shutting him down early on because they thought he was just a little tired.
Big frame, too.
Okay.
Big frame.
I know. And history of injuries in the lower region. It's just Boston versus Indiana. Now, last week, Boston played Indiana in a very important game in Indianapolis. And the Celtics played really well and won. And basically locked up having home court advantage in the first round with that victory, Jackie.
Right.
And to me, I said, all right, well, you know, I gave the Pacers a puncher's chance. But after seeing that game, which I watched pretty closely, I was like, I can't see him losing 4-7. But then we have a curveball. Marcus Smart, who you have said many times is one of the most important Celtics, the heart and soul of them a lot of times, brings huge energy in the playoffs, suffers an oblique injury that he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, maybe for the Celtics whole playoffs, maybe comes back conference finals, maybe if they make it to the finals. I assume they're going to have to promote Jaylen Brown to the starting lineup. Jackie, does this materially change this situation?
Oh, it does. This is a big, big loss for them. And for the casual NBA fan, it probably doesn't translate that way because Marcus Smart is a classic guy who, if you look at his stats, his shooting percentage is, you know, not good. I don't even know how many points a game he averages. It's got nothing to do with any of that. You know, you can go back to every game, he makes one game-changing play. And he has the respect of everybody in that locker room, including Kyrie Irving, he's one of the guys that will challenge Kyrie. I think that's really, really important because I think that this is a team that's been walking on eggshells all season long with Kyrie. They don't know what to make of him half the time. And Marcus Smart's a good translator for the rest of the group in that regard. So it goes to me so far beyond even what he does on the floor, which is significant. It's got to do with the chemistry and the leadership on this team. I've always said he's the real leader of that team. He's just not good enough to be that person, right? So, you know, in clutch moments, Kyrie Irving's going to hit big shots and they're going to eliminate the Pacers. But it's going forward that you really start to be concerned about this team in the second round. And maybe, you know, I don't know that they could beat the Bucks even if they were at full strength. And they, of course, the Bucks are still waiting on Brogdon. But this is a really big loss for them. I'll be interested to see what they do. I think there's a chance Stevens could be tempted to put Hayward into the starting lineup and have Brown continuing to come off the bench. You know, Jaylen Brown has probably been their most important player Gordon Hayward's come along, but Jaylen Brown's been really, really good. And nobody's really noticed. I mean, he's been good because he's been playing both ends. And he's really, the last 2 months has been a big part of why they've, you know, got to this 4 seed. So he has an interesting choice to make.
You know, the Celtics to me are the biggest variance team in the playoffs. I honestly could see them getting to the finals. I've been saying this for months. I call it on the jump. I call it the Celtics cone of uncertainty. I used to have the Lakers cone of uncertainty, but I retired it. Now just the Celtics are left. Mm-hmm. I honestly can see this team beating Milwaukee, and reaching the finals and putting the scare, into the Warriors or whomever is over there because they have that kind of talent. But, man, I would not bet on it.
Mike.
I would not bet on it.
I mean, Brian, aren't we a little too far along for that? I've never, and I have covered a lot of teams in my 30-some-odd years.
I have never covered one as
disappointing as this one.
It's my history of working with LeBron James teams.
Maybe. Just so disappointing.
I was going to say, the Lakers might be more disappointing.
This team is, you know, their own fan base, they don't particularly like them.
They're
very difficult. And the thing is,
let them go on a playoff run and they'll like them. But they were not a likable or fun team during the regular season. But you know, honestly, would it shock you though if things click, they get on a roll at the right time and they still come out of the East? It wouldn't shock me.
It would shock me because I know what I see.
You think it's too dysfunctional, huh?
I see inconsistency and I see when adversity strikes, I see everybody turtle. And they don't turtle. You know, they do the opposite of that. What they do is they all grab the ball and say, I'll do it. And what makes them good is when they pass the ball. I sit at home during this convalescence, my poor husband, we'd sit home and watch a game and they'd be ahead and they'd blow big lead and they'd get behind and I'd say, here we go. And I would count the amount of passes they would make on the, zero passes on that possession. Mm-hmm. Come back downhill. Oh, zero passes on that possession. When they share the ball and play the right way, I've said this before. I think I said it on the jump with you, Brian. I think they're the best team in the league when they play that way, when they're at their best.
The problem is when Kyrie Irving is dramatic when he's dramatically great when he plays isolation basketball, which is sometimes called
for in the playoffs. He's one of the best clutch players. Yeah, he's one of the best clutch players I've ever seen. But you have to get to that point with everybody else. So everybody's like, well, they don't like each other. I don't think it's that at all, guys. I really don't. I think they like each other, but you know what? They don't trust each other, and that's much worse.
That's a good point. She's talking from experience there. I'm talking from experience of seeing strange stuff happen in the Eastern Conference playoffs with when you have a superstar like they have. But I agree, Kyrie is not LeBron.
But he's talented. I mean, he's a great clutch player. It's not fair to put it all on Kyrie. There's too many factors here to say that. I mean, they're nowhere without Kyrie. So I don't mean to put it all on him, but the dynamic there, it doesn't work. Sometimes, you know, you can do everything right. Boston positioned themselves perfectly. They made the trade for Kyrie Irving. My goodness, it was a steal, wasn't it? They put themselves in a great position. They're going to have 3 first round draft picks, a chance at it, and you would have thought everything was perfect. But sometimes it doesn't work that way.
All right, so in the West, Warriors, Clippers finished weakly, and it cost them major playoff position. Yeah. They had a shot. They weren't even out of it for the 5, but they had a real good shot for the 6 and, you know, a chance for a more meaningful matchup. I was at a game that they played against the Lakers last week. You know, the Lakers, Alex Caruso was awesome in that game. Yeah. You know, the Lakers were playing very hard. It was a competitive game, but an inexcusable loss for the Clippers. Put them out of position, and they lose down the stretch and get the Warriors. And the Warriors were pretty damn impressive down the stretch.
Brian, I'm sorry to interject here. McMahon, do you have something to say? Did you want to say something? Because when he said Warriors Clippers, you're like, oh, God, why are we talking about this?
Sweep.
I never predict a sweep. I never predict. I don't predict anything, actually, but never a sweep.
You really want to get banned again? Is it predicting a sweep?
Hey, chill out. There's going to be some Clippers love when we get to Cajone's Factor Player of March, which we're a little late on since I was banned last week because you're sorry.
All right. Well,
oh, I can't wait to find out. I can't believe. I feel like I missed a really good party. That's what I feel like right now.
No, I got kicked out of a party. Not the first time.
Yeah, I know, but I wasn't there to see why.
Off.
You know, music too loud, too many shots of tequila. I don't know.
Anyway. McMahon's a beer man.
Thank you.
Yeah, but what, enough beers and everyone becomes a tequila man or woman,
especially in Texas. Number 2 Denver versus number 7 San Antonio. This didn't get finalized till late last night. By the way, the Nuggets were behind to the Wolves, and in a perfect encapsulation of the Wolves' season. I could almost say a perfect encapsulation of the last 3 seasons of the Wolves. Denver went on a 16-0 run to finish this game to secure the number 2 seed after they'd fumbled around and lost it. Jackie, Denver has been shaky, for the last 3-4 weeks. Their offense has eroded a little bit. Jokic has been up and down. They got embarrassed by the Warriors, which is not in a sin, but
by the Warriors twice and the Rockets once. They had 3 showcase opportunities and got spanked. Not just lost,
they're not ready.
Got humiliated. This is my upset special. Spurs in 6 and also the fact that, look, Paul Millsap's the only rotation player with any real playoff experience. Isaiah Thomas' playoff experience isn't going to help the Nuggets. And LaMarcus Aldridge is a problem. And that's a huge problem because when LaMarcus rolls, so do the Spurs. They are 37-10 when he gets 20-plus, and he's going to be getting a lot of 20-plus games in this series. I think the Spurs win this series.
I'd like to point out that DeMar DeRozan has a spotty playoff record.
He doesn't have to be the go-to moments. Guy, though.
I know, but he didn't always have to be the go-to guy in Toronto.
I'm not going to bail on the Nuggets just yet because Jokic has been a little up and down, but he's still been just a revelation. I was, you know, The Athletic. Did you guys see the players' poll of all the MVPs and all that? And you know, nobody gives Jokic any love, and he deserved it for this year, what he did. And he and Murray together, when he and Jamal Murray are on the floor together, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're pretty amazing. And they've had some really nice bench. You know, Malik Beasley's had a great year. Monty Morris, you know, again, they've got guys now. They haven't been there before, but sometimes when you're young and you don't know any better, the moment, I remember Sam Cassell always telling me that, sometimes the moment is big and you're not even old enough to know that the moment is big.
Yeah, but the fact is they knew the moment was big when they had a chance to play the Warriors when the top seed was still at stake, and it was too big for them.
The Warriors are a whole separate. The Warriors are a whole separate entity to me.
Okay,
the Warriors.
I mean, the Rockets recently. Like I said, they've shrunk in big moments down the stretch.
I think the Nuggets are going to be. And Jokic was on my MVP ballot. He was first team All NBA center on my ballot, and I think he certainly should win that.
He deserves that. He does.
And I think the Nuggets are going to be a factor in the Western Conference for years to come, but I think this is going to be a learning experience for them.
Derek White. He was the first team on my all defensive ballot. That kid is, he could play, man.
He's a great find. They are great at home. Maybe not so much lately, but they are great at home, and sometimes inexperienced and role players play better at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so the chance to play at home may be a big factor here. Okay. This is the interesting one. This is going to be, the next two series are going to be battles. This is potentially a seven gamer. Whoever was going to draw the Thunder in the first round was going to have a problem. The Thunder, after all of their wayward play, got it together and won the last five games of the regular season, won seven of their last 10 overall, got the sixth seed. They were facing the eight for quite some time there, got the six. We'll play Portland, who I think went 14-3 down the stretch themselves. This could be a battle. McMahon, you're more familiar with the West. You've just seen Oklahoma City up close. That was a big, huge win for them.
I actually didn't see that one. I was at the Dirk Love
Fest. Oh, you were at Dirk. That's right.
I was watching Jamal Crawford drop 51 at age 39.
That's right. A footnote in history.
I'm telling you.
Well, the Blazers are 0 for, right? They're 0 for this year against OKC. 0 for 4.
And they've had to sit around for a year after having been stunned swept last year. And they sit around for a year on that.
And they've got two of those. You know, it's been a long time since they've won a playoff series. That's a problem. They've got some playoff demons. And then, look, give them credit because they've still managed to keep on rolling. But not having Nurkic in a series is a huge problem, especially when you've got a deal. And Adams got banged up last night, so we'll see if
he came back in and he finished the game.
Yeah, but we'll see how healthy he is. But not having Nurkic, especially in a series when you've got a big, mean, snarling Aquaman looking beast like Adams on the other side, that's an issue.
Cantor does do some things for them. Cantor, he gets ripped for his defense, and there's no question it's a problem, but Cantor does some things, but this is his
Can't
buddy.
Play Cantor, as Billy Donovan got caught saying on the so famously Oklahoma City said. Bench when he was with the Thunder. Cantor.
Amazing. And by the way, it was just like a disgust on his face. Like, maybe not disgust, but it was just like...
The Rockets put him in pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll. I tell you what, though, man. Oh, man, what a juicy matchup. Dame Lillard against Russell Westbrook. And there's a heated kind of respect there. But there's also been Russ. Remember Russ last year when he was mad that Paul George didn't get the All-Star bid? You never hear players say, you always hear him say, my teammate got snubbed. You never hear him say who shouldn't have. He pointed out Dame as the guy who shouldn't have been on there. So that's going to be interesting to watch those two.
Well, and is McCollum healthy too? I mean, I know he played last night, but I don't think.
Nobody played last night.
The sixth game, the other one.
Healthy and in rhythm after missing all that time with the knee.
Right. Yeah, he's been out almost a month.
But it's crazy.
So it's bad. I feel bad for them.
Give Dame credit because they have since the All-Star break. Only the Rockets have a better record in the NBA than the Blazers, despite the fact that two of the three best players have missed a bunch of time, and obviously Nurkic isn't coming back.
These two teams remind me of each other, so I went and looked at some of the numbers. They're number 6 and 7 in the league in scoring. They're 12 and 18 in shooting percentage. Oklahoma City's number 2 behind Milwaukee in total rebounds. Portland's number 7 assists per game. OKC's 23rd. Portland's 25th because neither one of them sprayed the ball around a ton. Scoring defense, Portland's number 14. Yes, Portland's number 14 and OKC's number 15. But here's the one that separates them. Defensive efficiency. Oklahoma City is number 4 and Portland is number 16. And there's where, yeah. But the other numbers are so eerily similar. It's kind of.
But I will say that Oklahoma City is a shaky offensive team at times. It's not. They're not. The, yeah. They're not the greatest test. But here's what I know. Last year,
it's about Paul George. When Paul George was an MVP candidate, they were one of the best teams in the league. And you know, when he was struggling with his shoulders and inefficient after the break, they went through a rough stretch.
And he didn't play right in their final game either, right? Is that shoulder still bothering him?
Yeah, he didn't play, but the shoulder looked pretty good when he hit the three to beat the Rockets tonight.
That was a good execution on that play, by the way. Last year, I know that the Thunder don't have a Jrue Holiday. Okay, I recognize mm-hmm. that. But last year, I was at the first couple of games of the series with the Pelicans, and the Pelicans' game plan was: we are not letting Dame Lillard beat us. We will let CJ McCollum beat us. We will let Yusef Nurkic beat us. We will let Evan Turner beat us. And Evan Turner has had he's been a really good playmaker when Colin went down. But it wouldn't surprise me if Billy Donovan goes towards that game plan and just says, you know, because this is what you see in the playoffs. People forget every year how much different. And you can, you know, starting today, the Thunder are going to be able to tailor a complete game plan to do what they want. And so that's the question. Will they try to shut Dame down, and how will Dame handle it?
Yeah, okay, and Dame shot 35% in that series.
Trust me, I well remember. Houston, Utah. This is a potential long series too. These are your two of your teams, McMahon. What do you mm-hmm. What do you see here?
Yeah, obviously the Rockets are favored, and you know I mentioned the Rockets had the best record in the NBA since the break. The Jazz have the third best record. Now the Jazz also had a very soft post All-Star break schedule. Wasn't much of a series last year. The Rockets won that in five to move on to the conference finals.
No Rubio last year, though.
Exactly. No Rubio. So, and you know, Rubio's been banged up, so it's going to be interesting to see, how healthy he is. But no Rubio. Donovan, it was trial by fire with him having to handle the point guard responsibilities, which he's done a lot of this year, but last year in the playoffs was, you know, that was asking an awful lot out of a rookie. And then, you know, Capella was phenomenal on both ends in that series. And Capella is a huge key in this because, obviously, you know, Gobert is the best rim protector in the league, the best defensive player in the league. And so he's such a big part of trying to deal with Harden. But man, you know, Capella makes it really tough on those rim protectors because if you aren't perfectly positioned and timed, James Harden is the best off dribble late lob thrower I've ever seen. And so Capella will get dunk after dunk after dunk if you aren't executing perfectly defensively.
Nobody gets more dunks in the league than Rudy Gobert. Gobert set a record for dunks. Mm-hmm. Goes both ways. Right.
Yeah, and plus, I think Favors and Gobert together protecting the rim. I mean, Gobert gets all the credit, as he should. I voted him as my Defensive Player of the Year as well. But I believe Favors' numbers are pretty startling, too, when you talk about field goal percentage allowed around the rim.
Yeah.
He's Favors, right up there.
And Favors starts at power forward, but really his biggest value to the Rockets is he plays all the backup center minutes. And
yeah, he slides, you know, over. That's exactly
against
it.
Against second units, he's an absolutely, you know, he's a spectacular defensive anchor. And, you know, it's interesting. The Bucks, you know, people kind of look at that and say, boy, they defended Harden as well as anyone. But even though he had 40 and plus in one game, but it wasn't efficient, then, you know, the last time they're up there, he had more field goal attempts than points. And, you know, that's with Bledsoe, who's first-team all-defense on my ballot. But, I mean, exaggeratingly forcing him right, funneling him right into Brook Lopez, who's an absolute oak tree in the paint. And then Giannis helping off of P.J. Tucker, so all that length, and basically saying, oh, hey, if P.J. Tucker beats us, so be it. So, you know, that's pretty personnel-specific there. But in terms of being able to funnel him in to – you know, Gobert, that's as good as it gets. And then if Favors is helping off of Tucker, they might have a chance to at least kind of replicate what the Bucks did and make it tough on Harden, who, by the way, Harden's worst offensive performance of the season was against Utah. He had a 15-point game against them.
Well, Utah's a tough place to play. That's always a factor in the playoffs. I always think that, you know, no matter the matchup, and I know they've played the Warriors and stuff, but I always give them at least one game where their fans really helps them win. So I think the West, I think we could have a couple of seven-game series in the West. I actually could see three of the four series going seven. That won't happen, mm-hmm. but I could see it. I don't really see a seven-game series in the East unless Indiana stuns. I'm not seeing any upsets. I have on alert. I have Philly on a little bit of an alert if Embiid's not right, and if Boston kicks away a game, maybe. But all right, McMahon, it's time for. Is there a Cajones Factor Player of the Month for April, or is this a March April Co Award?
No. We gotta focus on March.
Okay.
We're still early into April. It's the end of the regular season, but there is basketball to be played, sir.
Okay.
So we're going to focus on March, and I apologize for being a week late on this, but please, everybody, send angry, obnoxious tweets to Andrew the Hater Hahn, because it was completely his decision to ban me from the podcast.
You know what the worst part of it about it was, Jackie? We decided we were going to do it all live. We were all going to be in the same room. Oh. And you may say to yourself, oh, well, that's why,
I was in L.A.
And you may say to Jackie, is that my beautiful wife? Is that my, sorry, go ahead.
It's Jackie.
Just got me right to talk to this. Yes.
We were all in L.A., and so was McMahon. And McMahon happened to be in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
But so then and where did this go wrong?
I can't talk about it.
Han got mad that I refused to go out to dinner with him.
No, that can't be it.
That can't be it.
Okay.
Actually, they wanted to do a bunch of Laker butt since what happened.
Little Cajones Lakers player of March.
All right. The bronze medalist.
I missed you guys.
The bronze medalist, a man who goes by the beard, a man who had one of the most ridiculous clutch flurries of the season, that 61-point performance against the Spurs where it was bucket, 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 bucket. Down the stretch, I think he scored, 14 straight points down the stretch for the Rockets to pull that one out. 38 clutch points in 23 minutes, shot it well. James Harden, maybe he will collect a slightly bigger honor than this at the award show, but he is the bronze medalist for the March Cajones Factor Player of the Month.
All right.
Is there
a Cajones Factor Player of the Year?
Yes, and we will do it once all the NBA basketball has been played for the year. I mean, the playoffs are when the Cajones matter the most. That's when they are, you know, it is the most prominent stage for the Cajones Factor. So how are you going to have that award when the most important stretch has yet to start? We'll get to it, and trust
Cajones me. Postseason Cajones are weighted.
Absolutely. I mean, are you kidding me?
No, I just want the rules. I want it on the record.
Yeah,
That's what I try to do as a journalist.
They're important in March, but they really matter in May and June.
Okay.
All right.
So May Cajones even heavier than April.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes, Mas Grandes. Mas Grandes.
Very good.
Hater Hahn, are you listening? He's ignoring it.
Tread lightly.
The silver medalist. This is going to be your little sliver of Clippers love on this podcast. Sweet Lou Williams, who I think is the surefire repeat winner of Sixth Man of the Year, but he finished second.
I disagree, but we'll get back. We'll get back to that.
Oh,
I disagree.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, and again, they faded in April, but he was absolutely ridiculous in March. You remember the game winner to beat Brooklyn. Dude had 16 clutch minutes, was plus 34, scored 25 points in those minutes, and I love the sixth man slash closer, and Lou Williams plays that role as well as anybody ever has. I was a huge Jet Terry guy during his time in Dallas, probably because he filled my notebook up over and over and over again. But Sweet Lou, he's got a lot of that in him. So the runner-up, the silver medalist, this little sliver of Clippers love just for you, Andrew Hahn.
That's not the goal, so I don't really know how that's you're doing anything for me.
All right. Okay. I'm just going to – may I interject here?
Yes, ma'am.
I understand why people vote for Lou Williams for sixth man because he scores like crazy. But do you realize that out of 115 shooting guards in the NBA, there are only two players in the league that have a lower defensive real plus minus rating than Lou Williams?
Oh, my gosh.
He's at a,
no, he's Jackie, at a, it's Cajonas player of the month. It's not
– yeah, but he was – but we were talking about sixth man. But we were talking about sixth man of the year. That's what I'm talking about.
I hear
about.
You, but he is a bucket getter and a big reason they're in the playoffs. So I'm
DeMontis
sticking
Sabonis.
With that. By the way,
DeMontis Sabonis.
He was third on my ballot.
Montrezl.
But if you want to bitch about defensive real plus minus, you're really going to hate the Cajonas factor player of the month from
No, Cajonas is different. No, Cajonas is different. I'm just talking about sixth man before we move on from Lou Williams. That's all.
But Wendy, I kind of showed my card. You know where I'm going with this, don't you?
I don't know if I do, but go ahead.
Trae Young,
who I believe
is dead ass last in defense real plus minus, but
barely ahead of Colin Sexton.
But you know what he ranked number one in? Clutch
Cajonas.
Points in March. Yes.
Yeah.
You know what else he ranked number one in? Clutch assists in March.
Oh, that's a good stat.
49 points. And 18 assists in the clutch in March. Now, a lot of minutes, 53 minutes, but was, shot 50% from the floor, 5 of 5 from the floor, last 30 seconds, score within 3 points. That included that game-winning putback to beat the Bucks JV. Yeah, it was the Bucks JV, but still was a sweet, sweet play. And one of the prettiest, right up there with Paul George. Remember that Paul George floater over Rudy Gobert to beat the Jazz.
This is right up there. That was one of the most amazing shots I've ever seen, that Paul George
shot. Hold on. But for a rookie to beat in a tie game, to beat Jimmy Butler off the dribble and knock down a 15-foot floater over Joel Embiid and lead the league for the month in clutch points and assist, Trae Young, he might be runner-up in Rookie of the Year, but for March, Cajonas Factor Player of the Month. He is the champion.
Send the trophy to Atlanta. All right.
Well,
Jackie, it is wonderful to have you back.
Thank you. You're here just
in time for the playoffs, for the money time. Look forward to that being a staple again. That's wonderful. McMahon, your banning is over. You're back. You came strong today.
Yes.
Good finish with the clutch assist stat. Gold star for that stat. I loved that stat. Andrew Hahn, thank you for keeping us honest with McMahon. By the way, Andrew and I played poker the other day, and Andrew won. But I bluffed him out of several hands. I had no cards, and I bluffed him out of several hands.
What were you playing? Seven-card stud? Five-card draw?
He was so happy. Like when he was playing poker, he's so happy because he's good at it. He's a former poker professional.
Andrew, can I just say, is it true, Andrew, that you spent Thanksgiving in Vegas? Tell the truth.
No, I spent Thanksgiving working.
Oh, okay. You did spend Thanksgiving in Vegas.
I've spent many years, many Thanksgivings in Vegas, yes.
I will say this, Jackie. We had a little get together to watch the Final Four. We played poker, and with the winnings that he cleaned up, he actually bought dinner. So he was a nice winner. But boy, did he enjoy picking us apart. Thank you, thank you to Andrew Hahn. I think that's Kyrie who's spinning the dials in Bristol. And thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We will be talking to you next week when we have some playoff games to talk about. Have a good weekend.
Yay.
Adios, amigos.